Hello and welcome to this episode of Matterfile, where today we speak with Mr. Zaid Basha about the agriculture and drainage systems in Yemen. Yemen, as you would have all gathered by now, is experiencing an unprecedented famine and drought, and this episode helps uncover the underlying historical reasons behind why that drought and why that mismanagement of resources exist. Our conversation covers the de-development of Yemen through neoliberal reform across the 1970s and 80s. We talk about why cut is particularly problematic and what needs to be changed in order to revalorize domestic crop production in way of changing demand structures in Yemen. All in all, it's a great conversation to helping understand how Yemen's agricultural sector is being crippled and decimated and what needs to be done in order to regrow and reconstruct the agricultural sector of Yemen. On a side note though, please do leave Matterfile a review on Apple Podcasts if you can. It would be massively helpful to help increase our listener base and our audience. Here's the conversation with Zaid. Welcome to this episode of Matterfile, where today I'm joined by Mr. Zaid Basha, who is a management consultant working at Deeproot Consulting. And he's written a couple of incredible papers on policy and socioeconomic analysis within Yemen itself. Thank you so much for joining us today, Zaid.
Thank you very much for having me. My pleasure.
So I want to start again from the history of the Republic of Yemen in 1962, when it first became a republic. And I want to look at agricultural reform and agricultural policy since then. So starting from government since then, and then to the unification in 1990, what was the agricultural policy like? And did any agricultural development happen in that time? What were the main agricultural products that were propelling the economy through that late 20th century phase?
So in the 1960s, two republics formed, the north of Yemen and the south, in the north of Yemen and south of Yemen. Most of the agriculture land is in what's categorized under the northern part of Yemen, because that includes the mountain highlands and the midlands and the very fertile valleys of Yemen, specifically areas like the Yemeni Tihama. After the formation of the two republics, there was a period of political instability because civil wars erupted both in southern Yemen, northern Yemen, and this continued throughout the 60s. However, by the 70s, a new agricultural policy started taking shape in its earliest form, perhaps in Yemen, and somewhat indirectly. What happened is Yemen has been historically known as a self-reliant country. It has been, for many centuries, almost fully dependent on itself in agricultural production, including food production. But what happened is that in the early 1970s, this self-reliant economy was undercut by two main events. First, U.S. wheat imports flooded Yemen during that period. And the justification for that was that these imports are cheaper because, in fact, they were, because they were subsidized both by the United States government as the exporter, but also they were subsidized by the government of Yemen as the importers as well. So it was definitely very cheap. This triggered what I call a domino effect in the country that has created a huge problem that has manifested itself today. The problem is that with these wheat imports, local farmers in Yemen were discouraged to continue their rain-fed agricultural practices, which they've been doing since time immemorial. And instead, and this is where the new agricultural policy comes into play, instead, market value crops were encouraged and valorized, and therefore terrace cultivation in favor of irrigated agriculture. And what happened with as time elapsed during the 70s is that within a period of two decades only, many of the mountain terraces were neglected. They started falling apart. People abandoned their lands. Mass migrations of Yemeni male labor started around that time, the Gulf countries, specifically Saudi Arabia. And from that point onward, the agriculture sector took a downward trajectory in Yemen. Now, the agricultural policy in northern Yemen throughout that period, the 1960s and the 1970s, was not necessarily a policy that was adopted by the government. It was not a national policy per se, as much as it was a global direction that was dictated by development agencies working very actively in Yemen during that time. Because at that time, after the formation of the new republic, Yemen became accessible to the international community. Development agencies started becoming very active, promoting market value, cultivation of crops and exports, overlooking traditional sustainable rain-fed agriculture. And so while it was not a policy that was directly adopted by the government, it was in a way indirectly dictated on Yemeni governments, and it just became the status quo for a couple of decades before we started seeing its problems.
You mentioned again that most of the arable land and most of the fertile land was located in North Yemen. Has that disparity manifested in the way funds were directed towards agricultural policy between North Yemen and South Yemen? In that, did an agricultural sector in South Yemen ever develop? And if so, what did it produce?
There were definitely an important agricultural activity in southern Yemen. However, in terms of exports and food production, the majority, and specifically stable cereals, stable grains, they were mainly produced in northern parts of Yemen. Southern Yemen, of course, had important agricultural products like cotton, for example, and other agricultural products as well. But when we speak of food production, when we speak of stable grains, which was a dominant part of the entire population's diet, all of that happened in the north. And therefore, the focus of those agricultural policies was directed towards farmers located in the mountain highlands of Yemen and the mountain midlands and the Tehamas. And the reason this created a problem, to be very precise, is that there is an ancient relationship, which is why, by the way, Yemen was known as Arabia Felix. There is a very crucial ancient relationship between rainfall and agricultural activity in the terraces in the mountain highlands of Yemen, and then between the terraces and the valleys, the wadis of Yemen, because Yemeni farmers over the centuries learned how to cultivate, how to harvest this rainwater, how to manage the seasonal rains of Yemen in a way that helped them develop essential crops such as sorghum, barley, millet, on which the entire population depended, not just for food production, but food consumption, but also for as feed for livestock in Yemen. And because farmers were discouraged from continuing this rain-fed agriculture activity in Yemen, what happened is that this system, this entire food production system, collapsed eventually within a very short period of time, within two decades almost, because the walls of the terraces started falling apart. Rainwater was no longer being controlled the way it used to be for a very, very long time. Floods started covering areas of the Yemeni Tehamas, and therefore people who depended on rainfall that came from the mountain highlands to irrigate the wadis now no longer received water that they were able to manage. Instead, they have been flooded by rains in ways that they could not manage, even with the help of development agencies in recent times. And so the whole system collapsed. As simple as it is, it was a self-reliant system that collapsed because those traditional agricultural practices were discouraged, were overlooked.
But if the government was discouraging or overlooking traditional agricultural practices like rainwater-fed agriculture for an irrigation-based system of agriculture such that their crops were more competitive on the market, did the government ever implement an agricultural scheme that would help irrigation-based crops, or did they largely neglect the growth and the development of an irrigation and drainage system in Yemen?
As far as the governments, the consecutive governments of Yemen are concerned, they did. What happened is that first of all, they supported such agricultural policy by, for example, subsidizing diesel, which helped farmers and encouraged farmers to turn away from rain-fed agriculture towards water, groundwater dependent agriculture. And not only that, those crops that depended on irrigated agriculture used bigger amounts of water, especially when you speak of items such as cat, the infamous cat that has consumed a huge amount of water in Yemen. So of the water used for irrigation agriculture in Yemen, almost 40% of that goes to cat. Now it is noteworthy that cat has been a refuge to Yemeni farmers from this international market system that encouraged exports over domestic production. However, it also has impacted Yemen in many ways by exploiting a very scarce resource in Yemen, which is water. So that's one thing that the government of Yemen did, was supporting irrigated agriculture. The other thing they did was ignoring and marginalizing smallholding agriculturalists in Yemen and focusing more on mass industrial production and exports, which was in later years subjected to cartel activity, which were the result of political contestations in Yemen that happened after the unification. And over time, smallholding agriculturalists were completely marginalized, which is very problematic because Yemen is a rural society. Traditionally, we've been a country of farmers. And so we depended on agriculture to a very large extent. The majority of the Yemeni labor force, either one way or another, is employed in food production. And unfortunately, this is not reflected in official, whether it's official or international, statistics on Yemen, because GDP accounting specifically, by definition, does not take into account own use, production, and consumption. And therefore, the integral role of agricultural activity in Yemen has been overlooked in so many ways, have been marginalized in so many ways, whether by the way we record statistics or through public policies that I have described in part earlier, or through interventions by development agencies. All those factors played or helped in reducing the role of agriculture in Yemen's development as a whole, overlooking the integral role of that sector.
And is it fair to say that because that sector and development of that sector was overlooked from the start of the Republic and after unification as well, Is that a leading cause as to why there is a famine in Yemen today and there is a massive shortage of food?
Absolutely. It is, by all means, the state of agriculture sector in Yemen is a state of crisis of the highest magnitude, I must add. To put it in the words of the United Nations, Yemen is today facing the imminent threat of a famine of biblical proportions, as they have described it. Others have described Yemen as the largest man-made human catastrophe. And it is precisely due to that, because we have 20 million Yemenis today out of the population's 30 million. We have 20 million who are food insecure, 10 million of whom are either starved or famished. So this did not happen overnight. This was the result of a huge mismanagement of the agriculture sector in Yemen. It was, I think, to a very large extent, Yemeni elites and politicians and bureaucrats take a big portion of the blame. They were very short-sighted. They were irresponsible towards the sector in particular and towards the country's development in general. But the external interventions by development agencies in the name of development have actually de-developed the sector, as described by some researchers. The sector has indeed been de-developed because, in a nutshell, to put it very simply, what happened in Yemen and in many agrarian and rural societies in the region as well, is that production market valuation has been favored over ecological sustainability and food security. This is really the bottom line of the whole issue. And this is an issue that you see in other countries as well, where exports have been promoted, which is good. Market and domestic markets have been liberalized and opened, which is good, but they have not been integrated with domestic markets. They have not been integrated with, take for example, the case of the Paraguay, a country which is doing very well in exports. Speaking of grains, for example, they're a huge exporter of soya beans. However, you cannot say that this is good in the long term because it's not sustainable. It does not integrate well with the rest of the economy. So this is very precisely why it has been problematic in Yemen. This is why today you have two-thirds of the country, believe it or not, in pre-famine stage.
This sounds actually quite terrible when you describe it this way, because if I understood you correctly, this means that most of the crop production that has been incentivized by international agencies is geared towards export-based crops, which means that the food security that could have been sustained by either subsistence farming or small-scale crop production has been completely wiped out. Is it possible, and is subsistence farming a realistic measure to help revive the food economy in Yemen and help revive some amount of food distribution in Yemen to help cure the famine?
Absolutely. It's not something that can be achieved overnight. We have to bear in mind that the change that happened in Yemen from close to food surplus, I call the transformation. It's not really a change. It's a transformation of Yemen from close to food sufficiency to food insecurity happened over a period of 5 decades. So you're not going to reverse that overnight. This is why I think that revalorizing agriculture in Yemen, reversing the de-development of this sector and the country as a whole, requires long-term planning. It is really, I think, the first and foremost, it is a paradigm shift. Unless post-war governments change how they look at the sector, unless development agencies change how they look at the sector, unless we revalorize agriculture and restore the central role of rural production and in Yemen's economy, I don't think we can achieve anything, because we will just continue along the same path of new liberal agriculture policies, which we cannot say that they're pure evil, but they've been oversold in Yemen to the point of making the country inordinately and absurdly dependent on imports. To give you some specific numbers, Yemen, even though Yemen has traditionally produced sorghum, millet, barley, which have been the country's staple grains, today Yemen imports some of Yemen's food staples, 70% is wheat. So Yemen relies almost entirely on imports for food staples, 70% of which is wheat, the majority of which is imported wheat, because Yemen only produces a very little amount of wheat. Wheat was never part of Yemen's food staples, and it was we have a durum type of wheat that was used traditionally for a very specific occasion. So instead of relying on the traditional home grain, homegrown native crops such as sorghum, millet, and barley, now you're importing almost over 90% wheat. You're importing 10% of Yemen's imports is include rice. Some 5%, for example, includes other items such as milk or cooking oil. Putting it together, the amount, I think, just before the war in 2014, the imports of Yemen's five main food staples amounted to a total value of $2.7 billion, which was almost a quarter of Yemen's merchandise imports. So this is definitely unsustainable. And I think it makes sense. I hope policymakers can see that at this point. I hope they can see what has not worked in Yemen, and that it makes sense that domestic production of homegrown grains should be encouraged, should be supported. Small farming agriculture is important, because it's not just about exports and market values, but it is also about sustainability, about livelihoods, and about people's dignity, really. Yemenis have not just lost access to food. Food is a right. They've lost an important asset. They've lost part of their dependency and dignity. So the issue definitely is beyond the issue of exports, to import or not to import is not really the question. The question is, have past agriculture policies commodified what's most important to us, our livelihoods? This is, I think, what's in question.
I'm assuming, because you mentioned the war, and I want to place this into the context of the war that started in 2014. But since the war, because of the blockades from Saudi Arabia, I'm assuming that a lot of wheat import into Yemen stagnated and stalled, which also probably contributed in large part to mass starvation and famine?
Yes, because the consequence of the agricultural policy of the previous decades was hooking Yemen with imports, specifically wheat imports. And once Yemen was hooked with imports, subsidies that made wheat imports cheap were lifted, Yemen became so dependent on imports to the point that they can't find alternatives. Wheat imports up to the 1990s were subsidized. By the late 1990s, those subsidies were lifted in full. By that time, if you compare the production of sorghum, for example, and barley, they have dropped by, sorghum has dropped by 80%. If you compare today, sorghum production today to what it was 5 decades ago. We have lost 80% of sorghum production, domestic production. We have lost some 50% of barley domestic production, which were Yemen food staples. Of course, come the war, it made the situation a lot worse, because since Yemen depends on international imports, we need to have access to foreign currency. And because of the blockade, because we've lost our hydrocarbon exports and the revenue that comes from that, because the Central Bank of Yemen basically had to use up all of its foreign exchange reserves, we really have no access to foreign currency. So not only today we have no domestic alternatives, but we can even no longer buy wheat or rice or sugar or cooking oil or milk, including milk for children, for babies, like baby formula, because we just don't have the Yemeni importers don't have access to the foreign currency that's needed. This is not to mention logistical issues. This is not to mention internal issues, whether they're related to the ongoing battles or closures or liquidity, internal liquidity crisis. So the war has definitely made the issue. It has not created the issue. It has amplified it. It has exposed it. And it has left the millions, as I've said earlier, really in a helpless situation.
Yeah. And the other consequence that I've been reading about the war is just a shift on issues that the governments, both the Hadi government and the Houthis, have actually shifted onto. So a lot more focus is going on to fighting individual battles or trying to galvanize support for their separate regimes or even solving the liquidity crisis. But from the looks of it, it doesn't seem as though either state, either the Houthi-controlled north of Yemen or the Hadi-controlled south, is actually focusing on any kind of agricultural development. Has this made the situation a whole lot worse? And what is the state of agricultural development right now?
It is an issue that predates the ongoing war. It has just been made worse by the current war. Yemen's economy as a whole has been overlooked. So internally, Yemeni elites have been too occupied really with political contestation, militarization of the state. Yemen has never been stable since 1960. As I mentioned, there have been just too many north-north, south-south, north-south wars. In fact, a friend of mine once half jokingly said that we should count our ages by the number of civil wars and conflicts that we have witnessed. And to a large extent, he's right. There have been just too many conflicts that have destabilized the countries. Of course, on top of that, you have the ill-conceived, short-sighted, oversold neoliberal agricultural policies that have been not just dictated, but dogmatically dictated in the country for a very long time. So you couple mismanagement of agriculture sector in Yemen, whether it's before the war or during the war, with these external factors, and you end up with a very difficult, intertwined situation that disentangling really requires a lot of effort. But we need to start. As I said, the starting point is a paradigm shift. I don't think attitudes towards Yemen's development or generally speaking, or agricultural development and rural development in particular have not changed. Attitudes towards those two have not changed. Yemeni politicians are still occupied with the ongoing, it is really a fight over power. There's just, you could put any name to it, but really, whether it's regardless of who's who, it is the Yemenis who are carrying the brunt of the war. It is really the Yemenis who are paying the price of the war, who are paying the price of overlooking economy. This is why a group of Yemeni experts and activists are really pushing the economic agenda. They're stressing that in any upcoming peace negotiations, the economic file has to be one of the pillars of the discussions of the negotiations. It has to be one of the outcomes. Unless we're able to restore some stability that takes into consideration factors as those we have discussed with regard to the agricultural sector, peace will never be achieved in Yemen. And it will only be temporary. And we have many historical evidences that show that unless Yemen becomes economically stable, and many in fact argue that the root cause of most of the conflicts in the country, going back all the way to the 2000s, whether it's the rise of Al-Qaeda or the Houthi insurgency or the southern unrest, wherever you look in the country, many argue and many Yemenis feel that the root cause really has been economic instability. And people have been just fighting under different banners over the years in hopes that they will change that. And therefore, it is very important for Yemeni politicians. I don't think there's much they can do during the war because this is really, developing the country is really a long-term endeavor. But I think as a starting point, we just need to change our attitudes. We need to restore the central role of the sector and rural activity. We need to respect the reality. I think what everybody has overlooked in Yemen is that they have overlooked the crucial relationship between the land and the lives of its inhabitants. This is why I think the development of Yemen is a matter of a national priority. We need to own Yemen's development after the end of this war. And the international community should support us, but in a way that helps us achieve dependency and not continue to do things that have proved over and over again that they're not sustainable, they're not favorable in any way.
I want to shift slightly and talk about the water sector and agriculture, because we've spoken about the famine and we've spoken about food insecurity, but Yemen also is experiencing incredibly bad water shortages and thirst and droughts across the country. How has the water mismanagement become so bad over time that people do not have access to clean water to drink?
Absolutely, yeah. Whether you're looking at urban Yemen or rural Yemen, both have very little access to clean water, to fresh water. In both parts of the population, I think you can say that some 50% don't have access to fresh water. Hence, the cholera outbreak that happened during the war, which has exceeded 1 million Yemenis. 1 million cases. I think some described it as the largest in recorded history, human history, not in Yemen's history, the largest case of cholera outbreak. So Yemen has been a scarce resource. It was mismanaged to the same degree that the agriculture sector as a whole was mismanaged when agriculture policy favored irrigated agriculture over sustainable rain-fed agriculture. This is exactly what they did. They overlooked the scarcity of this resource. They overlooked the fact that Yemen's water consumption exceeds its ability to recharge its very limited water resources. Yemen depends on seasonal rains, and in only very limited parts of the country, not throughout. Most of the country is a desert, really. And even the very fertile wadis of places like the Yemeni Tihamas, for example, they depend on rainfall. They don't have there's no surface water in Yemen. The majority of Yemen depends, not the majority, the entire country depends on rain for agriculture and food production. If you look at per capita water resources in Yemen, before the war, we were looking at, I think, 125 cubic meters compared to 1,250 cubic meters for the region of North Africa and Middle East. So Yemen, if you compare Yemen to a region which is already a very dry region, Yemen was actually 10 times lower than the region's average. And if you compare it to the world average, the world average per capita water resources sits at 7,500 something cubic meters, whereas Yemen is 125. So we don't have access to fresh water. Water is a very scarce resource. It has been mismanaged. The sector has not been regulated. It has been irrigated agriculture has been overfinanced, and it's quite a mess when you look at the different pieces of it. And it's just it speaks to two points. First, the degree to which the agriculture and water sector has been mismanaged in Yemen, but also the degree to which Yemen's de-development has been misread. It is surprising when you look at some international reports on Yemen. So, for example, let me give you an example. Some reports, even though Yemen has already reached this catastrophic decline, they still argue that the decline in the number of Yemeni labor employed by the agricultural sector, in fact, verifies the mainstream hypothesis that as societies develop, they move from agriculture activity to industrial activity and to services activity. So they attribute the decline in the mass migration of Yemeni labor to the Gulf countries. They associate the freeing of Yemeni labor from the land with development. And this is a huge misreading, because if Yemen today is an example of a developed society, just because it's no longer engaged in agriculture activity, then one truly wonders what a state of human and physical regress would look like if this is not already a case of catastrophic and dramatic decline, if this is not already a case of reverse development. So definitely water is a very scarce resource in Yemen, it supports the argument that it is very crucial to adopt policies that are sustainable.
But surely people before the crisis, before the war started, also acknowledged that there is a scarcity of water at some point. Like, surely people, especially with the population growth of Yemen, some government must have looked at the water resources and gone, we probably can't continue this because we don't have enough fresh water coming in. Has there ever been an attempt to either, like the UAE and Qatar, use water purification facilities to harness the large coastline that Yemen has, or to just harvest rainwater better so that it can be used all year round?
When it comes to going back to sustainable methods of agriculture in Yemen and practices that do not exploit water, Yemen's scarce water resources, I don't think there were any serious attempts. Because the policies have not really changed. Cut cultivation continues, as I said, like Yemen, Yemen's water resources are very scarce. 90% of those scarce resources goes to agriculture. And then you have 40% of that goes to irrigating cut or crops that don't really contribute to the population's dietary needs. So there's definitely been a shortcoming on that side. I don't think that the issue is that we are not entirely aware of the issue, but no serious steps were taken, evidently.
I read an article online that talked about cut being made illegal in Northern Africa and in some of the Gulf countries. Is this true, and do you think cut should be made illegal, not only because of the addictive effects of it, but more so just the amount of water it consumes and takes away from the large population in Yemen?
I don't think it should be made illegal. It is definitely a bad crop to cultivate because it's really a narcotic. It's a mild form. It's a mild narcotic. There's no nutritional value in it, especially when it occupies such large proportions of the land. But in the case of Yemen, of Yemen's entire cultivated land, pot occupies almost 15% of that. And you have to keep in mind that Yemen's cultivated land is very small. It's hardly 2% of the entire country. So for such a very small area that's suitable for growing crops and food, for such a crop to take 50% of the total land, it's definitely a problem. However, for practical reasons, I don't think it should be made illegal because a wise policy should be a policy that takes a holistic approach towards resolving any of these issues, especially those issues that take a long time to reverse. You have to give local Yemeni farmers alternatives. You have to gradually shift away domestic cultivation in Yemen from cut. I don't think making it illegal is wise. I don't think it's practical. Even if and there are some examples in Yemen, like an area of Yemen called Haraz. Haraz is very famous for, in fact, they are a success story in being able to replace cut cultivation with coffee. Coffee is a cash crop that's not just valuable in local terms. It is very valuable internationally speaking. It is an important international commodity, and I think Yemen should adopt policies that gradually shift away from cut cultivation to cash crops, which are they're underutilized really in Yemen. We don't produce enough cut. We don't export enough cut. We should be exporting cut, not other water intense. We should be exporting coffee, not water intensive crops such as the fruits or the vegetables that Yemeni exports to neighboring countries. Sorghum production, I think, needs to be revalorized, needs to be encouraged. It is an important alternative to wheat. As I said, it is telling that domestic production of sorghum has dropped by 80% when it used to be the number one food item.
From the sound of it, though, the land that is currently being used to cultivate cot is still very fertile land and other crops can be grown on it. Do you think the imminent policy reform should be one that focuses on already fertile land that can be repurposed and reused for growing other crops other than cash crops like cot that are being grown on it, or repurposing land that has previously been non-irrigatable, such as a lot of the desert land in central Yemen, and using that land to grow or maybe do animal rearing or just use that land for agricultural purposes?
Yes, I think that would be a wise way forward. I think the cornerstones of any post-war agricultural policy should adopt a holistic approach. It should provide alternatives, and it should we can definitely try and increase the area of land that can be cultivated in Yemen. But I think a starting point is just making sure that we take care of what we already have. Because I think, even though it's just 2%, but it is, I think, it can contribute significantly to domestic production and consumption.
I want to talk a bit about the role of international organizations and bodies in informing agricultural development in Yemen, because you've already talked about the forced neoliberalization of the Yemeni food market And we have touched a bit on the role of import and the importance of imports in Yemen's food economy. What is the other forms of intervention that have been implemented by large organizations such as the UNDP or large amounts of funds that have come from the World Bank? What have those funds gone to in terms of agricultural policy? And how should those funds now be used or now be redirected for more effective agricultural policy?
I think most of the funds went to over financing irrigated agriculture over rain-fed agriculture. So those definitely need to be reversed. A lot of external financing has supported Yemen's budget, which a large part of which was subsidizing diesel, for example, which farmers use to pump groundwater or water to irrigate their lands. So these policies need to be revisited, and they need to be retargeted so that we reinvest in rural human capital. So not just the land, but also the people themselves. Policies should be directed towards improving people's health, people's education in the rural part of Yemen, where the majority of Yemenis live. They need to be directed towards retraining farmers, providing them with the finance that they need, because currently a huge problem in Yemen is that even if farmers today wish to pursue other kinds of cultivation other than cat or other than export-oriented products, some of them just don't have the money, they don't have the finance, they can't find local seeds because those local seeds and the local stock of native seeds have been lost over the years. So funds need to be redirected towards these things. We need to create employment in the rural sector to avoid the forced migration that occurred during the 70s and 80s of the Yemeni labor. Those people migrated because they were isolated, they were disconnected from their lands. And so you need to restore that connection to the land so that they're not really forced to find job opportunities outside of rural Yemen or outside of Yemen as a whole. So definitely there are lots of areas that future policies need to look at. And it's, as I said, I think what has been overlooked in Yemen is the relationship, the crucial link between the land and the lives of its inhabitants. And therefore, to reverse that, to restore that balance between the land and the people, you need to look at both parts. You need to make sure that terrace cultivation is supported, people have access to finance, and not just that, you need to look also at the, for example, one of the things that have been changed in Yemen is that women in Yemen lost the integral role that they played in agricultural production. They were an important player in rural Yemen. They contributed to the rural sector's productivity, and this role has been lost. It has been lost because the understanding around the role of women in agriculture in Yemen has been changed due to cultural reasons, but also due to policy reasons. Land has been abandoned, and therefore it was no longer being utilized. So you need to look at many different dimensions, not just one dimension: irrigation, human capital, people's health. You need to adopt demographic policies, not just agricultural or water policies. So it really needs to be holistic. And this is why earlier you asked whether previous attempts to rescue the sector have succeeded, and the answer was no. And the reason is because they never really adopted a holistic approach. They never really saw the sector as a whole. but rather very small components of the sector.
You have mentioned up until now that Yemen needs to establish an independence of sorts after the war, at least, so that it can fend for itself and feed its own citizens. Do you think foreign direct investment from countries such as US and China that are investing in the Gulf and in the Arabian Peninsula might actually play a role or might help in the development of the agricultural sector by providing things like infrastructure to Yemen?
Perhaps. I don't know. So it's something to consider, definitely. I think it is important to realize that Yemen's agricultural transformation has not been just a social and an environmental transformation. It has also been simultaneously a political transformation. And therefore, geopolitics have played a very important role in the decline of food production in Yemen. And perhaps it can play a more positive role going forward in restoring the sector's infrastructure, basic infrastructure specifically. This will require that the government attracts foreign direct investment into the rural sector of Yemen. However, it has to be well managed. It has to be owned by Yemeni governments and by Yemen's bureaucracy. Yemen's bureaucracy needs to take an active role in long-term planning. We really need to look at, I think we need to reimagine the role and the importance of the sector in Yemen. We need to create a far-sighted vision that restores the sector's central role in the economy. And once we have that figured out, then we can from there figure out how countries can play an important role in revalorizing and restoring basic infrastructure in Yemen. Yemen should not also ignore perhaps the opportunity of integrating with the region's economy. Unfortunately, due to the conflicts within the region that have been going on for a very long time now, Arab countries have never really been able to move beyond political conflicts to look into how they can integrate their economies. It is quite unfortunate that initiatives such as the Gulf, for example, the Gulf, the GCC, has not been able to unify their borders, their customs systems, their currency. And I think Yemen should definitely, as a future vision, should try and integrate with the region's economy with the support of countries like China and the U.S. But I think the caption here, the fine print here, is that Yemeni governments need to own whatever agricultural policy they decide to formulate and pursue and execute in the coming decades. And they need to understand that it is going to be a long redefining the relationship between Yemen's domestic markets and the international market. Coming up with new rules of the game that work for us before they work for the international markets is a long-term endeavor. It's not an easy task, and it needs to be not only owned, but it needs to be planned with that understanding, with that mentality, is that the fruits of such policies will be harvested after a very long time. And unless we have that long-term focus, the sector and the economy more broadly will just continue to decline further and further. Although one wonders how much more trouble Yemen can get into.
Yeah, I fully agree. I do think that a large-scale restructuring of economic policy and agricultural policy once the war is over is going to be pivotal and absolutely essential for the growth and development and the rejuvenation of Yemen's agricultural sector. Do you think, though, that in the interim, before the war actually ends and in the current state of conflict in Yemen, there are some small-scale changes that can be implemented either through means of provision of humanitarian aid by international organizations or just by individual households within Yemen that can help combat both the water and the food crisis in Yemen today.
I would like to see the assistance of the international community in the medium term, and the short to medium term is necessary. It is inevitable. And I would like them to see them find local alternatives to food assistance that's in the form of wheat, for example. I do find it very absurd, really, that in a country that does not produce wheat, food assistance comes in the form of wheat. It just makes it speaks to my point earlier that Yemen's de-development has really been misread. And this is why I think it is a paradigm shift to reverse this trend. We really need to change how we look at the sector. So I would like to see the international sector find the international donors provide food assistance to Yemen, but in a different way. They should encourage homegrown alternatives as much as possible. Of course, we don't want to starve people, but there are lots of lands that we can provide with the financial assistance, with the technical assistance that enables them to engage in the domestic production of sorghum, whether it's for human consumption or livestock consumption. I would like the international community to help Yemenis restore their stock of native grains that have been lost over time. This is an important area. We should definitely create employment opportunities, whether through cash transfer programs or any other developmental interventions that create opportunities in the rural sector, that reconnect the people to their lands, that help Yemeni farmers put back the walls of the terraces that have crumbled and that have led to these floods that are now flooding Yemen each summer. So there's definitely a lot that can be done in the short term while Yemen is able to recover from the war and start taking bigger steps towards the economy, the development of its economy.
Just how important is agricultural and water reform in the development of Yemen? Can you quantify it as to just how important and just how central this reform is going to be once Yemen comes out of war, or even in helping Yemen come out of war and become a stable functioning democracy?
I think it is a number one priority for many reasons. It is a reality that Yemen is a rural society at the end of the day. Most of the population lives in a rural part of Yemen. The mass migrations of Yemeni labor that happened during the 70s and 80s was not really a choice. It was forced in some ways by ignoring smallholding agriculture in Yemen. I think smallholding agriculture should be as important as small and medium enterprises, which we think are a very important component of any healthy economy. And I think in a rural economy, by comparison, small holding agriculture should occupy the same priority. So we should. I think it's important. It needs to be a priority. As I said, we are a rural society today. It's not sustainable. Like, our food staples import bill sits around $2 billion annually. Our population will continue to increase. So in 5 years' time, this might jump easily to 2.5 billion. Come 2030, maybe we'll be approaching 3 billion. As I said, as of 2014, Yemen's import bill for five commodities only, which are wheat, sugar, rice, milk, and cooking oil, they amounted to $2.7 billion. 2.7 billion. That's almost $3 billion, which is almost a quarter of the country's entire merchandise imports. It does not really make sense. Like in the late 2000s, Yemen's exports, total exports, I think they were at around 8 billion, of which, the trade deficit reached almost 4 billion just before the war, on the years leading up to the war. So it's not sustainable financially, fiscally. It's not sustainable. It's not meaningful. It's not sensible for a rural society to ignore rural livelihoods and rural activity. It's not really helpful to the country in the long term. I don't think the country should ignore other sectors. They are important. Oil and gas is important. We need to restore full production, if we can, of oil and gas exports immediately following the war, because it generates very important foreign currency for us, which we then use to buy food and buy post-war recovery material that we will need to rebuild the country. But we need to diversify the economy. We need to make sure that agriculture achieves its potential, and its potential is huge.
That sounds pretty accurate. And if this is to be achieved, then the economic strain on the country, because it's importing and paying a lot to import all these agricultural goods, will just be massively relieved and aid economic development for sure. Just lastly, before I let you go, Zed, can you recommend any books or popular media outlets that people can access to better understand the situation in Yemen today?
I can make some recommendations, because Yemen is not a specific case, although an extreme one. The severity of the crisis of Yemen is similar to many other countries in the region. I think the work of people like Martha Mondi, she's a professor emerita of anthropology at the London School of Economics, is a necessary reading on Yemen, because unless you understand the political economy of Yemen, of the sector, unless you understand not just the ecological, agricultural changes, but also the geopolitical, the role of external and internal factors, you'll never really understand the issue, the full issue, and you'll never be able to put it into its right context. So I think the work of people like Martha Mondi is very relevant. It is very, I find it very rigorous and very insightful. She has been working on Yemen since the 1970s, and she's very passionate about the Yemeni Tehamas and the agriculture in Yemen as a whole. I also recommend, for a broader perspective, I recommend reading Dr. Ali Qadri's book entitled Arab De-Development. It provides a very important analysis and an attempt to explain the region's decline, because it's the issues that are faced in Yemen are not just Yemeni issues. You can find their parallels in other Arabian countries, and it will help understand what I have referred to earlier as de-development of the agriculture sector. It is he who has coined this term to emphasize the fact that the decline of countries like Yemen and other Arabian countries was in so many ways deliberate. It was purposeful. It was not a matter of chance. The explosion of population growth, the huge dependence on imports, the overall poor performance of the economies of the entire Arab region, especially rural societies, was in many ways the unfortunate consequence and result of ill-conceived policies in the regions. And I think those two would be very good readings. Lastly, I think on agriculture sector, people like Max Agel from the University of Cornell, he's very recently written a very good historical account of Yemen's rise on dependency. And it provides lots of very, very helpful statistics and analysis that goes all the way back to the 60s and then to the years leading up to the current war.
Thank you so much for this, Zed. I would also highly recommend Martha Mondi's book chapter, Neither Security Nor Sovereignty on the Political Economy of Food in Yemen, because it's a great resource to help understand what food insecurity in Yemen actually looks like and what the historic context of this food insecurity currently is. Thank you so much for joining us today, Zed. It's been incredible having you, and it's been an incredibly interesting conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a great conversation, and I wish the country, the people, all the best in the coming decades.